Okay, we're going to get started. Welcome to session number 331, Moderating Mormons in Cyberspace. I'm the moderator, Lindsay Hanson Park, and I'm just going to be moderating the session, but I am part of most of this ragtag bunch of people. We're all moderators online, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce our speakers and then allow them a few minutes for remarks, and then we will host a respectful Q&A. And as moderator, on Facebook and in the session, I have experience. This is not my first rodeo, and we will moderate you. We will ban you from the session. So you have been warned. So yeah, I will silence you if you speak out of turn. I'm just kidding. Okay. So first, let's start with Derek Lee. He's fantastic. He began avidly consuming all things Mormon online after he discovered 3 years ago that the church history is actually interesting. Congratulations, Derek. That's great. Then we have my friend Geralyn Hasselpool. You've probably never heard of her. She's a graphic designer and Feminist Mormon Housewives permablogger. She also moderates the Feminist Mormon Housewives Society Facebook page. And she enjoys serving candlestick salads to missionaries and creatively feeding her 5 children. You can Google that. It's on YouTube. Then we have the wonderful Andrew Spriggs, who you never want to argue with online. He moderates the Facebook group, which is Sunstone's Facebook group, called The Mormon Hub, with Diplomacy and Tact. Did you write this? Which are the names of his dual wheel. Okay, I gotta start this over because this is great. He moderates the Mormon Hub with Diplomacy and Tact, which are also the names of his dual-wielded ban warhammers. He's got Diplomacy and Tact right here. And he also writes sporadically for the blogs Wheat and Tares, where he and the other permabloggers are notoriously more likely to offer guest posting spots to obnoxious commenters than to moderate them. So that's fun. And he also blogs for Irresistible Disgrace, a blog that receives so few comments as to not require not much moderation at all. Great. And then we have Nicole Forsgren Velasquez, and her bio is cut down really short, but she does a lot of amazing things. She's a professor of management information systems at Utah State University and moderates 2 online Mormon groups, one of them being The Mormon Hub, as well. And then we have Rock Waterman. You've probably never heard of him either. He is the proprietor of Pure Mormonism blog and author of What to Expect When You're Excommunicated, The Believing Mormon's Guide to the Coming Purge. That's a new book out, and I think he can give details about that a little bit later. And he, too, has been in the wild, wild west of online Mormonism. So, Derek?
Okay, is this mic working? Yes? Okay, good. I can tell. I'd like to just begin a little bit by talking about myself and how I kind of came to this. As Lindsay mentioned, about 3 years ago, I discovered that church history was actually interesting. A lot more interesting than I had ever supposed. And it's funny because growing up, I wasn't really an avid consumer of history or, you know, Sunstone and Dialogue and all of that. Even though I did grow up in a family where I think we did like to talk about the intellectual issues and that sort of thing, but there was a lot of stuff that I didn't know about. And when I discovered the online Mormonism world, it was at a time in my life where it was exactly what I needed. There were discussions going on that were just invaluable to me to help me sort through all of this new material that I was being exposed to or that I was seeking out on my own. And I think everybody knows, you know, that's there's publications out there, there are books, there are blogs, there's podcasts, and you can make a full-time job out of reading and writing and talking about this stuff. And so I discovered this community, or these communities, I should say. And maybe, actually, can I ask for a show of hands How many of you are part of a Mormon Facebook group? Yeah, I thought most people here would be, or you probably wouldn't be coming. Just any Facebook group that where Mormonism is discussed online, and I know it doesn't just happen on Facebook, but so anyway, okay. How's this? Ah, that's a lot better. That's why I didn't think it was on. Now, where was I? So when I first discovered these communities, I for me it was a real support as I was working through a lot of issues, and I discovered a lot of people who with whom I had a lot in common. Somewhere along the way, a few years back, I got invited to help moderate John DeLynn's Mormon Stories podcast support community. I think that's the official name of the group. But when he at one point decided to only restrict the discussion in that group to just the podcast, the Mormon Hub was created under the Sunstone umbrella. Lindsay pointed out that the Mormon Hub is Sunstone's Facebook group, so if you're not a member and you like Sunstone, we invite you to join and take part in the discussions we're having there. It was formed last year, just a little over a year ago at that time. So that's, I guess, just a little bit about me. I think I'll just pass the mic and we can go from there.
I just want to see a show of hands of anybody I've moderated in this. And then, yeah. And there should be more hands. I know who you are. And leave your hand. You should leave your hand up if I've banned you. Probably. Burlingame, you should put both of them up. I moderate both in the FMH Facebook group and in the Hub. I do a lot less in the Hub because they're in much more capable hands. But in FMH, some of the things that I do personally to moderate, well, I get tagged in a lot of conversations that start to go south, and I don't have a lot of patience for that sort of thing. So I sort of moderate with an iron fist, and I apologize for that. I shouldn't apologize. All right. Well. All right, then I retract my apology. But some of the things that I like to do is steer conversation. I know, especially in a feminist Facebook group, especially in FMH, sometimes we're accused of not being feminist enough, and I understand where that is. It's sort of a learning area, and we try to facilitate discussions that are more feminist-friendly. We've started some, and we try to be a place where you can be both faithful and feminist, so we try to facilitate discussions around faith and around feminism. And then when things go south, we have to take matters into our hands and do some sometimes really, really difficult work. So that's what I got to say about that.
I think I can take this other. Can y'all hear me? Okay, we had to make this one work out. I'm Andrew Spriggs. If you read a lot of blogs, I comment as Andrew S. because that will totally hide my identity and you can never connect the two. As mentioned, I have a solo blog, Irresistible Disgrace, but I think that my moderation experience really comes from two different approaches, one with the group blog Wheat and Tares, and then also from the Facebook group Mormon Hub, which, since it is a Sunstone production, all of you should be a member of. And the reason I say that is because I think that Wheat and Tares and the Mormon Hub kind of take very different approaches to moderation. And it's kind of interesting because both are kind of brain children of works that John DeLynn has been a part of. Wheat and Tares was the successor blog to Mormon Matters, which was a blog before it was a podcast, and which was a podcast before it was a blog before it was a podcast. And the thing about Wheat and Tares is that There are several of the perma bloggers who are very against moderation of any kind whatsoever, as in the perma bloggers will shut down everything if moderation happens, which is why Wheat and Tares exists as a blog instead of More Matters, because of a moderation mishap. And I think that there are a couple of reasons for this opposition, and then I'll kind of explain what we're trying to do differently with Mormon Hub. One of the reasons why Wheat and Tares is traditionally against moderation, and I think we want to investigate, is because a lot of us are people who have been moderated in other groups. Like, I've been banned at By Common Consent. I've been banned at the other groups. So I know that it's very easy to be excluded. It's very easy to be shunned, and we didn't want to have that happen just because people think differently or express themselves differently. The second thing is that moderation, in a lot of senses, has an eerie similarity to church discipline, in the sense that our panel, Moderating Mormons Online, could easily have been one of many panels about, you know, the disciplinary actions taken against a lot of very popular online Mormons. I mean, we have Rock here who can talk about that. But the interesting thing about coming onto the Mormon Hub as a moderator is that I took a very euphemistic approach to moderation that, now that I look at it, it looked very similar to how the church speaks about church discipline. When you're moderated, you're not being punished. We love you. We just need you to go somewhere else.
And repent.
But seriously. But seriously, my approach to moderation was to try to reach out to people and try to talk to them about where are they coming from, why were they posting the things they're saying, why were they saying the things, and I would try to persuade them to say, well, we're trying to do something different with the Mormon Hub. We want these sorts of values. We want to encourage these sorts of comments. There are other boards you can go to for, you know, these other things. And sometimes people would just disagree. They'd say, I don't agree with what you're doing. I think that, you know, we're all adults. Adults should not be moderated. But I still didn't want to moderate them. So even then, I wanted to be, you know, loving and kind, and I didn't want to punish people. So I used a very unfortunate concept that was, you know, enshrined in our cultural language by another prominent Mormon, Mitt Romney. I didn't want to ban anyone. I wanted them to self-deport. And I was actually very successful in this as a moderation approach. Unfortunately, now we have this phenomenon called YAG, or Yet Another Grand Exit, which poses its own moderation problems. So I think, though, that there's definitely some issues, because even though we want to have this kind of loving approach to moderation, we want to have this, we explain rationally what we're trying to go for, different people have very different views on what is appropriate, what should be appropriate in a community. And part of it is because of who we are as Mormons in an institutional community where moderation as an institutional act feels very tense. It feels very charged. And so I hope that there will be lots of questions on that, and I hope that we can explore that further.
Hi, I'm Nicole. So I'm also a moderator at the Hub. I also have another group where, so I'm a professor at Utah State in actually MIS and accounting. So I have created another online group that's very focused, very small, and it's interesting because I have a couple different styles. So in the Hub, I have kind of a style where it's a little more hands off. Snark is my calling. I tend to blame a lot of my moderating activities on lack of Diet Coke. At the time, I try to be a little hands-off, kind of let some things happen, ask people to step back and cool off and maybe put themselves in time out sometimes, think some things through, or tell people to just chill. Now, in contrast, I have a slightly different, smaller group where it's very focused. I've created a group specifically for feminist Mormon or feminist-minded shared cultural background type people who are pursuing careers or who have careers in academia. So it is a very focused group. You have to be currently pursuing or doing research. And in that group, I am the owner. I am the dictator, benevolent. And in that group, it's very, very different. So we do not talk about Mormonism. We do not talk about feminism, except how it kind of intersects in our lives. And I keep a very, I say I keep a very, very tight rein on that group, because there are plenty of Mormon dudes who have PhDs. They're great, and they're lovingly known outside of Mormon circles as the Mormon Mafia. And so I don't let them in my group because I love my group, and that group is lovely. But that group has become, you know, kind of an awesome group, and it ends up not needing very much moderation except for the slight loving nod of, this is a really, really fantastically cool, awesome project, but I really, really worry that this is going to end up turning into a giant Mormon-based rant, can we please keep this group focused on other things type of a situation. So it's been interesting being in a group like, being a mod in a group like The Hub, where that's the only thing we do is rage out at things that are Mormon affiliated, Mormon land, Mormon circle centric affiliated, and helping guide those situations, you know, and I know sometimes we even talk about how, you know, at what times do we participate in conversations, not as a mod in any way, and at what times do we participate in those conversations as a mod, but very distinctly do not use a mod tag, because there are some times where we're kind of trying to help guide a conversation, but not guide the conversation, just to try to help keep it under control, and at what times do we pull out the mod tag and really try to make sure that we're keeping things under control. And then, you know, there are other times where we have a group where the group dynamic is completely different. And that's been kind of an interesting situation, because Mormons are different, y'all. I mean, I'm also a mod in a totally different group where there are Mormons in there, but it is not a Mormon group. And modding those groups is totally different. So, and I'm sure some of that may come up in Q&A sessions. So that's my background.
I'm Rock Waterman. I maintain a blog that I call Pure Mormonism. Unlike a group, I don't feel the need to moderate, or at least that was my intention, was just to let the thing be wide open and never censor and let the conversations go wherever they wanted. And I do, and in most cases, they'll go off topic, and that's fine with me. But for the last year or so, I've had a particular little thorn in my side. He started out calling himself A.W., and I didn't notice it at the time, but he took my initials, my first and last initial, A.W., and then when he was becoming, the other commenters were growing tired of him, and he became Little Rock. He started calling himself Little Rock. The reason I bring this up is because this guy, okay, I want to say one thing about him. One of the first things that he said is, why should we follow you, Rock? And I wrote back and said, well, you shouldn't. You know, you'd be a damn fool to follow me. Because my blog is about following Christ, and the reason I call it Pure Mormonism, in my view, Pure Mormonism is following Christ. What we're seeing evolving in modern Mormonism is a conversion to following the brethren and the leaders of the church. So this particular guy was really one of these follow the leader types, but he was constantly causing contention, and everybody was private messaging me and asking me, just get rid of this guy, but I just didn't want to do it. But 3 days ago, I finally said, you know what? There's no light in this guy. And everybody's been talking to him, and then they kind of try to explain and teach him. I don't spend much time talking to him, but he's become a distraction. So I finally told him, you know, I love you, go in peace, but just go somewhere else. And he continues to post, and I continue to delete those posts. And now he's posting, the posts he posts are all about how Rock is a liar and hypocrite. And the thing that is really interesting that I find is he's chasing me all over the internet, and he's pulling these weird quotes. You know, one time I was having a private conversation with somebody, and I referred to the clowns in Salt Lake City, and he brings that back, and he quotes me all these. So my wife, Connie, over here, she thinks he's dangerous. But Thankfully, we don't live in Utah, and hopefully he's not here in the group. So, did I mention I wrote a book? Okay.
Okay, so we're going to allow you to ask questions. And I feel like I should have started out this panel just to kind of explain as a primer, because we're using a lot of terms for those who aren't familiar. So we're specifically talking about how we interact with Mormons online. And if you need clarifying terms about mod tags or something like that, maybe we can explain to them what those means, because we're very familiar with them, but people might not be. And if you have questions about, like, the technical, how that works out, you can ask. So go ahead and come up to the mic.
Hello. So I moderate the what's called the Phoenix Open Mormons, which started out life as the Phoenix Regional Mormon Stories Community. I'm just going to take this off. And so one of the particular challenges that we've had for, you know, there's about 500 members. It's not huge, but it's not tiny, right? So is kind of handling both the, you know, there's faithful people in our group and there's non-faithful people in our group. All of the, currently all of the moderators are non-faithful people, but, or unbelievers, whatever you want to say. But how do you guys go about in your various communities kind of fostering good communication and respect between those two groups of people?
That's always a challenge, obviously. And I'd say one approach that we take is we try to model good civil discussion. Whether we succeed or not is maybe another question, I'm sure. All of us have said things at one point in time that we probably regretted saying, and you mentioned that your board of moderators are all non-believers. We kind of we have a mix. We have a very broad spectrum on. I'm speaking about the Mormon Hub here. That's the one that I'm on. And it's interesting because we get criticism from both sides. You know, when we have hardcore left the church, still angry about it, and they'll come to our group sometimes and accuse us of mental gymnastics and apologetics, and you're defending the church too much, and then you have the other side which comes and they're expecting, oh, how wonderful, a group where I can share my testimony with my fellow saints. And they discover that that's not exactly what we're doing in that group. And it's a difficult bridge to gap. One answer is to say, and we have this in our comment tank policy, we list a number of groups, and we say, look, this is what our group is trying to accomplish. We want dialogue between differing perspectives, differing levels of belief, but ultimately, this is just a Facebook group. And if it doesn't fit what you're looking for, here's a list of a whole bunch of other groups that you can try to fit into. But that's all I'll say. I think you guys.
Well, and every once in a while, so do you guys know what a mod tag is? Sometimes I'll just like put little some kind of brackets around the word mod, and then I'll put a comment, and then another set of brackets around the word mod that says that's basically this is official. Like, don't. Whatever this says in between the little brackets that say mod, this is official, which really means nothing. But and sometimes I'll just say, don't be a jerk. And be respectful. Don't be a jerk in a mod tag. And every once in a while, someone's like, oh, whoops, sorry.
One thing that I want to say that I don't know if it's fully been circulated, but one thing that we sometimes try to do is we try to make it truth agnostic. We do not like truth crusaders. So that means all the missionaries who join the group or try to join the group, I make sure to kick them out. And all the people who are trying to solely convince people to leave, I kick them out. One of the things I liked about what Derek said is that he finds Mormon history to be interesting. So it's not about whether it's true or whether it's false. It's about whether it's interesting. And so one of the things that I think that even for the non-believing moderators and the non-believing members, it's because we find it interesting to pursue various topics, even though we might think that it's absolutely false, or we might think that the way that the institutional church is, it will never be implemented, or that it's fringe or something, but it's interesting, and we want to have that kind of environment. So one thing that we try to express is, you know, for people who are so caught up in the truth claims that that's the only thing that they can focus on, whether it's, you know, in favor or against, we're kind of not there. Like, we're not the place for people to kind of be processing, you know, just finding out about the issues. We're for people who've kind of maybe taken a step back or who are comfortable in their faith, who can, you know, investigate these issues without having to prove to others about it. And I think that's kind of what should be cultivated in certain groups. And if people don't want that, as mentioned, there are other groups that you can tell them to go to. We're not the one true Facebook group.
My comments are directed to Rock. I discovered your blog about a year and a half ago, and really enjoyed it. And I noticed it really echoed the comment you made, that there seemed to be very little moderation needed on the comments on your blog, with the notable exception that I've seen. In my opinion, your posts are generally more edgy and provocative than any of the comments that are generated. And so how much self-editing has to go into your posts? And just example, I mean, the Training Day post that I read, I thought, wow, Rock really did it this time, just skewering Elder Perry's priesthood training meeting. Then the after that, the Mission President's Handbook post. And then, and of course, recently on church discipline, I'd say really the focus on putting the focus on Christ and not fearing what man can do has really been very influential on me. And the effect being that the threat of church discipline just holds no, it's no threat.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Well, my editor, that's why I have a wife. I wrote a post or two that just wasn't working, and she looked it over and said, "You can't put this out there because there's no or very little love or light in it." And that's what I'm trying to do is, I'm trying to be a good Christian, good Mormon. And sometimes I do get—I will admit to having less patience with leaders who feel it's their position to control the church than I would for the rest of us. Joe Mormon, who's just trying to find his way through the darkness the same as I am. So, I'm a little, I do use gentle sarcasm at times, and, why, maybe once or twice? you know, I see this church so different from when I was growing up. Correlation clearly had a lot to do with it, but we are now in a church that requires loyalty to the church, and by that is meant loyalty to the brethren. I don't want to take forever answering this question, but just before I wrote my book, I was reading, and I quoted Gordon Hinckley in it. He wrote he gave a talk, I think, in 2003 called Loyalty. And it was, he insisted that we should have uncompromising loyalty to the church. Those were his words. And then he went down a list, loyalty to the brethren. I'm not sure what else he said, but loyalty to the family, loyalty to this. And then his exact words were, and finally, loyalty to Christ. I looked at that and said, finally? That should have been up at the top. He's putting the leaders at the top. And the church at the top, whatever the hell that is, because in different people's mind, well, most people think of the church, now we have divided, just as the medieval Catholics In the first century primitive church, they were the people. They gathered together. But by the time the Holy Roman Empire had taken over, the church had divided into two classes. And when the people in those days referred to the church, they were referring to that hierarchy that was above them and wiser and more spiritual and better than them. And they no longer thought of themselves as the church. They thought of headquarters as the church. And that's what we're doing today. We are the church. No man or group of men owns or controls this brand. And as Robert Reese said recently, there are two qualifiers to this, to the name of our church. It's the Church of Jesus Christ, and it's the Church of the Latter-day Saints. It is not the Church of Brigham Young. It's not the Church of Thomas Monson or the 12 or even of Joseph Smith. It's the Church of Jesus Christ and his people. And I've been on a soapbox too long, so... Just like on my blog, I'll go on forever.
I'm kind of scared to follow this up. my question is, I have to start out and say that I'm coming from a very subjective, mildly libertarian, very individualistic, just stubborn, independent person kind of mindset, and that is, I do not like moderation. When people tell me,
most of us don't either. It's cool,
right? But when people tell me, and maybe part of this is because I'm blind, and people want to try and grab me and pull me places all the time, and I have to say no, thanks, but go away, please. You know that kind of bothers me, and so maybe that's kind of rubbed off in my interactions in the Mormon bloggernacle, I guess. So my question is to all of you, I'm curious what the best case for moderation is, and maybe you can illustrate that by, I don't know, maybe your most dramatic horror story, or I guess biggest instance that you've had where moderation was clearly needed, because I'm curious.
Well, then. Oh. That's such a loaded question.
Yeah, I mean, so right now, like, mic down, I just said, which one do we want?
Hey, guys, why don't you talk about when conference time, conference time is always a huge time for issues, or maybe big dramatic events happen?
Or even... Okay, so, for example, when news of Kate Kelly was about to hit New York Times, we had 30 to 45 minutes before the New York Times news story was going to hit, we found out. So we were able to, we got news, you have 45 minutes to prepare, this is going to hit New York Times, what are you going to do, how are you going to manage this? A storm is going to hit the hub. What are you going to do? Now, this isn't necessarily you're going to moderate, you're going to shut everything down, but how are you going to manage the storm that is about to descend upon the hub? Well, and everything, right? I mean, Geralyn is also a moderator at FMH. So at some point, we were also trying to figure out, is there going to be, not necessarily coordinated across several Mormon-related groups, but how do we want to manage several things that are going to hit all at once? Right.
And moderating the Kate Kelly story in FMH was a lot different than moderating it in the Hub. When Ordained Women was first announced, we actually separated... We started two different threads, one for people who agreed with Ordained Women and one for people who did not or had questions, because there was a lot of back and forth and arguing. So when the news hit, we didn't take that same tactic. What we did was we knew that people had to process, and we wanted people to be able to process their feelings So we moderated very lightly, but one of the things that we like to think about in FMH is you're coming into our living room. We want you to treat our guests the way we want our guests to be treated. And so when the Kate Kelly stuff broke, we did have issues of what was our biggest moderation issue there? And we had what? Oh, right. Well, no, that was in the hub. He is not an FMH. sometimes we get you know, men who will come in and explain why things are the way they are in FMH. And if you're a member of FMH, you know that doesn't fly. That is maybe something that works in the hub for you, so you can go there, but it is not something that works in FMH. I just throw y'all under the bus. Anyway, I'm sending them your way. And so that was a big thing for us, trying to prepare the community, trying to respond to the community, processing such a painful thing, which is ongoing, really. That was from a feminist standpoint.
Now, in the hub, that has a very, very... The hub is not so much feminist. And then we had to deal with Kay Kelly and John DeLynn.
I want to speak more generally, because it seems like we're talking about specific instances, but we need to talk more generally about the general theory behind why someone would want moderation. And I think it's because different spaces are trying to create different goals. And, you know, sometimes the goal is open discussion of Mormonism, whatever goes, whatever, you know, flies. But sometimes we're trying to cultivate something else. And I think at Mormon Hub, we are trying to cultivate this more kind of relaxed, less balanced, truth emphatic kind of environment. And the thing that I notice is that Mormonism kind of follows this entropic law where if you don't do anything, Mormonism will tend to devolve into angry ranting and, you know...
And it'll devolve into an endpoint. Absolute truth on an end. Absolute truth of truthfulness or absolute truth of it's all bunk, you're crazy, how do you not see that it's insane?
Actually, I would actually disagree. I would say that without any moderation, it only devolves into disaffection. The faithful groups who maintain that, you know, absolute truth, they moderate heavily because they know that if they don't, they will be overrun with the disaffected Mormon underground.
Unless you get enough missionaries. I mean, sometimes you get enough of, like, there are the crazy faithfuls, too, who are like, and then it's just chaos.
So one example, I don't really have an example of good example, like, a good use of moderation, but I do have an example of the opposite. Instead of pointing out to, you know, a great example of moderation, I like to point out, you know, a good example of what happens when you have no moderation whatsoever. We don't have to imagine about this, of course, because after the hub was created, someone decided that they didn't like the tyranny of the hub, and they created... We have a rule at the hub that you can't talk bad about other groups, but since this isn't the hub, I can. They created uncensored Mormon and LDS discussion. So that's another great place. If you don't like moderation or censorship or anything like that, absolutely go there. Now I'll tell you about this. The idea here was that nothing would be moderated. Nothing would be deleted. Nothing would be, you know, removed. Everyone would be admitted. So you have missionaries joining to try to preach. Of course, I think they got the hint that they should leave. You have people who are even more zealous than the missionaries who stay because they are not bothered by the hordes of people disagreeing them. They don't seem to really want to engage in any sort of conversation. And of course, you have, you know, the standard, you know, disaffected narrative that they can't see any reason to possibly proceed in a different way. In a, you know, they think that nuance is a bad word, for example. And so you do have chaos. You actually do have some, you know, very believing members on this board, but there's no communication. It's just ranting, and then other people rant back. And the thing is, there's a lot of discussion. So if discussion is your goal, I mean, there's a lot of comments in terms of quantity. But as far as, you know, light instead of heat, we don't really see that. And the interesting thing, as was mentioned, is that over time, even though people seem to want this completely uncensored, completely unmoderated experience, you know, I checked there the other day, and it seems like they have some rules where You know, it looks like this moderation to me. So it seems to me that people want this idea of unbridled freedom, anything goes, but that it seems to promote a very kind of brutish and obnoxious kind of society that when we actually live it, we don't actually want. And I'm not saying that to people who actually, you know, appreciate libertarian ideals or things like that, but it just seems to me that in lived experience, we actually want some kind of regulation. Even if it is, as, you know, Uncensored had before they had their official moderation policy, you tell everyone to personally ban on Facebook or block on Facebook the people you don't like so you just don't see what they post.
There's always going to be that guy. Like, don't be that guy. There's always that guy. There's always one or two that's going to ruin it for the entire group. They made it for a while. They made it a good 6 or 9 months, but eventually they had to... Then they tried to just create a policy and have everyone self-police. They eventually, I mean, they've got, what, 2 mods now? They had to have mods.
They said a lot of what I was going to say, but I do want to add a couple things. First of all, the question was, what is the case for moderation in general? I would say there's a few pragmatic concerns, too. We're all people, and we all have lives, and so we don't want to be obligated to be sitting in front of our computer all day long while people are carrying on conversations that really aren't going anywhere and are kind of driving people away. So sometimes we'll step in and say, you know what, guys, I don't think anybody's going to say anything new. Let's just stop it right here. We also discourage what we call meta discussion about the hub itself, because and we put it under the discourage. It's not that it never happens, but it's like we've set this group up, and we don't want you to come in and tell us why this group is not for you and why it should be run differently. And if you have some constructive input, we want to listen to it, but we're not interested in completely changing the approach of the group. If you want that, then we would like you to seek out other groups that do fit. But the third thing that I wanted to say was where we absolutely draw a line and where we feel it's absolutely necessary to moderate is with respect to people who are marginalized and unfortunately marginalized through their interaction with Mormonism. So that often includes LGBT individuals, abuse survivors, women who are sharing their experiences. People of color. So any, you know, racism, we will stomp that out. We definitely put our foot down there. And I could even give you some examples. I don't want to name names, but there's one particular guy out there that I think if I said his name, you guys would all know who he was. He's done some things, and he was in our group, and we had to let him go because it didn't work out. But I think he hangs out in the Uncensored group.
It's not him. It's us.
Like Rock, I don't moderate. And I have found that it actually leads to better conversations. Is it because we have perhaps a smaller readership?
Well, in some group, I have a group that I don't moderate, but okay. This is, like Andrew said, there are some, the group that, in the hub, we're trying to very, very carefully craft a certain type of balance, and it's a very large group, and it's a very careful balance, and
it's because you have a larger group, and so you're trying to control the direction of the conversation.
Not control. Yeah. Carefully guide?
Carefully guide, okay. Well.
One thing I would say as a blogger is that I rarely mod on my personal blog because, you know, I need all the comments I can get. And if someone is saying something that, like, sets off a fire, I want that. Even though if it's not on topic or it's not the topic I was thinking about, you know, I'll allow it. And
a blog and a Facebook group are two very different things, because a blog, you're controlling the content. A Facebook group, you are not.
Okay.
One thing that happened on my blog, though, was that I got someone who was trying to stalk me and who was trying to harass me and things like that. And I don't necessarily know if, I mean, I even let him comment on my blog for quite a while because it's kind of like, you know, he's showing to everyone else that he has no credibility in his group that he's trying to promote to, you know, prevent, you know, anti-Mormonism or whatever really isn't, you know, on the market. People can read what I write. They can come to their conclusions, but you can't harass me. But I think that there's just a different dynamic between blogs and Facebook. And so one is, like you said, different readership. I will say in defense of large blogs, like, say, By Common Consent, I think that they're also trying to do similar things like the Hub is doing, where they want to have a certain environment. And so if people don't fit that environment, they are, you know, not afraid to use what, you know, they have to. And then another thing is, I like the analogy used elsewhere of it being like a living room. One of the more conservative bloggers put that analogy, like, you wouldn't invite someone to your living room and then let them do whatever they wanted to your property. So in a sense, like, Facebook groups and especially blogs are like your living room. And if people are going to be disrespectful in your living room, you should be able to, theoretically, even if you don't do anything, you should be able to set the terms of whether they can, you know, what they can do and what they can't. He said, point them to the guidelines. And one thing is, some of the groups online actually have this policy where you cannot join the group until you've read the guidelines and, like, filled out a survey or something. And I thought about doing that, but then I realized that would be way too much work. But one of the issues is, and this is especially for the Hub, this is history for you guys. As was kind of mentioned, it was kind of created in response to some changes in directions with the Mormon Stories podcast community. So there are people coming there who already had an idea, well, this is what we would have done in Mormon Stories, and, you know, so I'm going to do it here. So it's very difficult to set, you know, ideas about what you want to do from the start. And even if it's a completely new group, people come from their interactions with the church, from other groups that they've been in. So it's very difficult to say from the beginning, oh, this is what this group's going to be about, because they're going to bring in their ideas of what things should be. They'll bring in ideas maybe like, oh, you know, I'm an adult. Adults should be able to describe whatever they want. You know, that kind of libertarian impulse, which I understand. I get that. But the fact is, just because we're all adults doesn't mean that we don't cause trouble. Like, you know, politics is run by adults, and yet we haven't, you know, gotten world peace and stuff like that. So, you know, something much more important, like an internet group.
I'm not moderating you. I just wanted to add something, and you can moderate me as the mod. I actually started the Hub for Sunstone, and so just to go with the history, like, I was at IKEA when John DeLynn said that he was going to stop his Facebook group, and he said, hey, do you want it for Sunstone? And I said, sure. And that's how the Hub was born, and there's 4,200 plus people. And so it was started, and we had no idea what it was going to be at the time.
It just happened to be like within the same week or two time period. And so people who were in the Mormon Stories group were like, oh, it's just converting. No, it just happened to be like the same week or two. So
Great clarifications there.
As a moderator for FMH, we do have one of those rule things that you have to sign before you can come in, and that's because it helps us, first of all, we can weed out a lot of misogynists that way, surprisingly large number every day, and second of all, every day I'm surprised by that, and then second, if you can follow directions and sign a document that'll allow you to get in, then, like, you can follow some sort of moderation. We feel like that's a good key to somebody who can play nice with the group. On the blog, however, individual writers moderate their own posts. So sometimes the moderation seems a little, some people are willing to let a conversation go farther. I am not. I don't got time for that. And so I'll shut people down from commenting who are antagonistic or calling my faithfulness into question or calling my feminism into question. So those people get shut down pretty quickly just by me. But anyway, like I said, it might seem a little unevenly moderated on the blog because every writer has their own code of moderation.
Before we move on, I would just like to acknowledge Tim Malone here, the man who asked the question. He's one of the difference makers on the internet and the blogosphere. His blog is called Latter-day Commentary, and while most of us were raised to believe that truth only comes through the proper channels, one of the main things that Tim is showing is that truth does come from outside the institutional church, and he's valiantly trying to strike that balance. And in some respects, sometimes it feels like you're losing or fighting a losing battle, doesn't it, Tim? Against the forces of certainty. Certainty, in my view, is the biggest block to learning. I grew up bearing my testimony that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the church is true. And I know this and I know that. Today, I believe I'm inclined to certain views, but knowing, unless I was present when Joseph Smith was there at the first vision, I can't claim to know that he saw God. I believe he saw God. But I'm getting off track again. The point here is, well, I just loved him alone. That's the point.
My question might be a little bit off topic, but my question is to you, Rock. Compared to Denver Snuffer, how long have you known him? And you have the same message. You've seen the same faults in the church. My wife and I have gone through a testimony shuffle, I call it. We still have a testimony of Joseph Smith, Book of Mormon, Christ and His Atonement. And we've always held on to that. And your message is the same as Denver Snuffer. And my question is, or would you talk to us and talk to me and my wife and tell me your comparison with Denver Snuffer? How long have you known him? When did you recognize that your message was the same? And Tim, I sure appreciate that last post that you did, talking to me and my wife. I just thought that was right on myself. And if you'd answer those questions for us, thank you.
Well, the difference between Denver Snuffer and I is Denver Snuffer is humble. I've communicated a few times with Denver. We've had some brief internet conversations. I'm really looking forward to meeting him today. I didn't know we were preaching essentially the same message. I had my blog running, and people would continue to say, you should check out Denver Snuffer's blog. And the first time I went to it, I saw that disclaimer in the front that said, you know, if you haven't read the books, don't even bother. Yeah, you're not going to understand anything. So I sort of backed off. But since then, of course, I follow. He doesn't like that word, follow. I read his blog. I check in to see if he's got something new. And another big difference between Denver Snuffer and I is his blog posts are brief and succinct, and mine are not. But I love him, and I agree. I think one of the things he's discovered is that the myth that the leaders of the church have certain keys is revisionist history. We've been raised to believe that. There is no evidence to show that, and there's certainly no spiritual gifts. When we look at the church in Nauvoo, we saw spiritual gifts, we saw healings, speaking in tongues, all kinds of miracles taking place that we don't see today. And if we're asked to follow men who don't show any reason that we should follow them, they don't receive any revelations, they don't teach us anything new, they don't do anything but quote each other, I say, okay, I got off topic again. But yeah, Denver Snuffer, great guy. Oh yeah, he doesn't allow comments, and I would imagine that's because he doesn't want he doesn't want to have, well, that's the way he moderates it. No comments. So, but if you were to write, leave a comment, that's how he contacted me through email. So, but Denver doesn't want to be a leader. Well, that's something we have in common. This fellow I mentioned in my first remarks, you know, where he said, why should anybody follow you? And then all he does is follow me all over the internet. We don't want followers. We don't need leaders. Jesus Christ is our leader. We have the scriptures. We have the Word of God through Revelation. We have the Book of Mormon. And if we had a prophet, seer, and revelator who prophesied, saw, or revealed something, I'd be the first to pick up my ears. I'm not saying, oh, I'm rejecting this. I'm saying I don't see anything. So I think we get to be good Latter-day Saints by following Christ and getting away from this idea that there is a priestly class above us that we should follow.
This is the example of when you need moderators.
Yeah. Okay, I will.
No, I'm
close
just gonna
this comment.
No, we have time. I just want to say, Rock, you're fascinating. So I don't want to dismiss. I think a lot of people are here to talk to you and hear that. But if we could keep our questions on topic about moderating Mormons, since
you can't silence me.
That's your first warning, Sarah Burlingame. So, like I said, I don't want to dismiss anybody's opinions, but it's my job as a moderator to keep this on track. So if we could keep it as how we interact with Mormons online, that would be fantastic.
Thanks. Sorry about that. So I'm Bill McGee. I always start everything with my name because I learned that when I operate anonymously, I'm likely to be much more obnoxious than... So now I put my name and the town I live in on everything I do. Because it keeps me from being thrown off of sites like I used to happen a lot. How many of you have been thrown off a site? Okay, okay, so I'm not as... I asked how many people have been taken off of a site or been moderated away from... Right? Yeah. Yeah. Don't suggest that John DeLynn is starting a cult of a personality because that will get you right off their site. And I've since apologized for that, but I was in a bad mood. So anyway, what I've noticed is that there's a broad spectrum of moderation, not only from site to site, right? Like getting something through the comment window on Deseret News is very different from getting something on. But I've also noticed that inside individual sites, there seems to be a spectrum of what's tolerated depending on who's kind of paying attention at a particular time. And I feel like this whole notion of moderation has kind of developed organically because of a need, right? You've needed to come in and step in. Is there any effort to develop, I don't know, at an academic level or some kind of a best practices process for how do you do this? I mean, obviously it's going to be influenced by the charter of the organization that you're with, but There's very little consistency, and I think that's normal. But that's my question.
If you would like to fund it, we would be happy to start that. we're all unpaid moderators, and but yeah, I think it would be good. I mean, moderation is just something we sort of do because we just do it. We all have a different approach to it, so.
One thing I would say is, speaking of guidelines and documents and things like that, is we at the Hub have had several sessions of trying to get the moderation document, the mod doc, and it's been several pages, and then we got it cut down and we made it longer and all that kind of thing. So there's definitely people who think of it from a conceptual level, but one thing that we try to do is a lot of times, like we have a behind-the-scenes, you know, admin group. We will try to talk to each other about whether a comment or a thread is, you know, appropriate or not appropriate, so that we can kind of get some kind of consensus between, you know, the believing, you know, members of the mod team and the non-believing members. Because some people read something, they'll say, that's not bad. And then other people will say, and they'll be like, this is a problem. And so one thing I think this helps in is, even though the moderators may not always be on the same page, we do talk to each other so we at least know what the some of the criticisms would be, because sometimes if someone's being moderated, you know, they'll run and tell another mod and ask, why did you moderate me? And the other moderator will be like, I don't know. But if we had that conversation behind the scenes, then at least they can say, this is why. We've talked about, you know, whether we agree with it, whether we do not agree with it, and this is what we've come up with. So I don't know if that's scientific. Again, if you'd like to suggest, you know, some sort of fund or something like that, we would definitely be for that. But we do try to do something to try to get everyone on the same page.
Well, and then in terms of the hub, we've even had, you know, extra meta conversations about how many mods do we need, what types of things should be, I don't want to say required, but responsible contributing value add mod behavior, contributing content, what types of things can be helpful as mods, should we remove mods, you know, are there mods that are just kind of hanging out and not really doing anything, those types of happy conversations.
So this is a little bit of a different train of thought, but I have an observation that I love your observations on. So I'm married to Brother Jake, so I guess I'm sister Brother Jake. And when he, it's interesting when people comment on the video, they're not commenting on the video, they're commenting on the comments. And when, you know, when typical TBMs would go to the videos instead of watching it and observing it and, you know, thinking their own thoughts, they just see a bunch of, you know, anti-Mormon things, and then they make their observation on the comments rather than the actual material. So it's just kind of been a fascinating thing to see either family members or friends comment on the video, but actually they're not commenting on the video. And I'm sure all of you have lots of experience in this. And it, for me, it just kind of makes me think that online discussion is useless. But I know it's not, because I am part of lots of your groups and I benefit from them. But, you know, anyway, if you could comment on the comments of something, if that makes any sense, I'd like that.
Well, I think that's what makes a thread interesting. People commenting on someone who said something before. So is that not what she's talking about?
I think, if I understand your comment, is the concern that instead of commenting or reading any of the original content, they're skipping the original content and only reading the comments or even just the bottom comments? They're not addressing or even watching the original content or the original video. Yeah. They're not judging the original content or watching the original content. They're looking at one or two comments and judging and commenting on that.
So 9 months ago or so, I saw a comment on the FMH blog from one of my brothers that was really unkind. And I deleted the comment because I have the power. And I emailed him directly and said, you could knock that off right now. We haven't spoken since, but whatever. I think it is really hard. If I'm understanding your question or comment, it was that it's hard for you to see family members and friends engage in that way without reading the comment.
Do you want me to clarify
content
for you, Erica? Okay. Because we had a meta conversation about the meta moderation. This is a good space.
Okay. Well, most of my comment was on what you've experienced and how you deal with that when people don't actually read the comment or don't actually internalize the actual content and how comments derail.
So they skip the original post.
Or they watch it, but they don't address it. Does that make sense?
Are you talking about YouTube commenters?
What Erica's saying is, like, as moderators, do you have any sort of policy about people doing pure soapboxing that doesn't engage the original content? And what she and I were talking about was, is there wisdom in making it a blanket policy? Like, look, if you do not engage the original comment at all, you will be deleted? Or should it be person by person?
when we get commenters on FMH that obviously have not read anything we've written and are just coming in, it's just trollish behavior, we might direct them back to the content, and if they continue to ignore it, I ban them. So they get maybe two shots with me, and then they're done. Until they apologize.
But, I mean, there are some threads where eventually the thread becomes a conversation and participating in the conversation is fine. But if they're just trolling, then they're just trolling.
Yeah. Anyway.
Erica, is your understanding of trolling people who have some investment in the original content, and you're saying these are people who have no investment in the original content?
Okay. This is where this comment comes from, and then we can go on, because this is kind of meta. But so I think I
understood your content, but your comment, but I'm having a hard time addressing it in the context of any group that I moderate.
Okay. Yeah, and I think it might just have to do with
YouTube.
With blogged posts or YouTube as opposed to Facebook groups.
Right.
And maybe this isn't a space to discuss that as much, because they are very different worlds. But yeah, so maybe that's a different panel.
That's a private conversation later. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I know we're not supposed to go meta, but I'm now live blogging that we've digressed into a meta analysis of the hub. So if the room explodes, that's why.
Burlingame, seriously? On track.
All right. Okay, so I did tell everyone on the panel that I was coming purely to heckle them and to, like, test their moderating chops, but I'm not going to. I thought that the question that was asked, that Nicole responded, oh, you know, the excommunication of Kate Kelly, that's a great example of how everybody had to hustle around that. And I was remembering how very differently, being a moderator in FMH Society and the Hub, we dealt with that. And, I mean, we were like primal beast on FMH. We were like, we're going to feel all of our feelings. You know, let's get it all together. And who has brushed their hair today? You know, put a picture up if you've brushed. I have not brushed my hair today. Like, we were there. And on the Hub, I just have a totally different expectation. You know, that on the Hub, that we're there to have these conversations. We're there to create this new framework for believers and not believers to have a conversation and hear each other talk. And that's something that I feel like very removed from, except when Kate was communicated, was excommunicated. She was not communicated. I feel like it was so heavily emotional that it made that little leap. It made that little bridge where we started saying, like, well, I did, you know, like, hey, let's do a little check-in. It's been 3 days. How do we feel? And so my question is, like, do you have expectations as moderators that as a moderator that you're building community, and do you have expectations that this will lead to IRL in real life connections? Are you happy when that happens, but it's not the goal? Like, I'd love to hear, like, what your personal feelings are about the community that you think you're creating. That sounds snarky. You think you're creating, but you're not. Yeah, that's my general question.
As a total shut-in, I do not normally expect that my online activities will lead to in real life sort of situations. Although every time I come to a Sunstone or something like this, people know who I am, and I'm kind of like, oh, nice. I know that there are some other groups that are more focused on that kind of personal relationship building and on that, you know, we're going to have a meetup or we're going to do different things. And I don't necessarily expect that from the Hub. I don't necessarily expect that there's going to be a Hub meetup, because since the Hub was created by Sunstone, Sunstone is the Hub meetup. Once again, if you're not in the Hub, join it. But I don't necessarily expect that there's going to be, you know, Hub events. There's like there were Mormon Stories communities of support. We don't have Mormon Hub communities of support, although there were meta conversations on whether we should do that.
Just a couple of things that popped into my head, though. One thing that's good about Facebook in my opinion at least, is that you're using your real name, and it does make it a little bit more intimate. And I've noticed some of the interactions that I've had with people in the hub or in other groups, it does lead to, you know, you friend them so you can follow them, and you might even comment on their wall outside of the Facebook group. And if you're really lucky, you might meet people in real life. I mean, I've really loved coming here and meeting people that I've only interacted with online. So I don't know. The question, I think, was, you know, do you have the expectation of that? I'd have to agree with the hub. I don't think that's explicitly any part of our expectation, but it's certainly nice when it happens.
I have two questions. They're pretty quick. One, so when I first joined FMH, it was very, very small, and then it started getting larger and larger, like exponentially. And when that group started, there was no moderation, and it seemed like when things kind of got out hand, a lot of times there was this idea that the Facebook group would go away, and then moderation started. So is that typically what happens with these groups, one? And then two, when John and Kate and Rock all went up for excommunication, it seemed like a lot of us who have decided that we want to leave the church really reactivated, and we wanted to be involved back in Mormonism. Are you seeing that in your groups?
So I'm not an FMH mod, but there's always been moderation at FMH. It was just, the group was so I'm going to say I've been like super underground lurker stalker FMH for a long time. There was always moderation. It was just so small and done so smoothly that no one ever knew. Lots of people didn't know.
Yeah. Well, we do have a really large group now, and it does require a lot of moderation, it is a lot behind the scenes. I think we're like ducks, peaceful on top and paddling furiously underneath to try and keep, to have conversations with people who are maybe marginalized in the group, or to smooth over feelings, or to direct conversation a certain way. So I know... I've heard people call the FMH blog the true FMH and the Facebook group the Wild West, which I think is fairly accurate. It is kind of wild in there at times. Anyway, what was the second question? I've totally forgotten. All I can think about is moderation. And when you say activity, do you mean activity in the group or back in the church?
No.
Oh, okay. I think that there's a lot of fear about sharing your opinion, wondering who's watching and where it's going.
I think we saw a spike in activity right after the announcement and after the excommunication, but I anecdotally... I've seen a lot of hush and quiet since we've been hearing stories of quiet and temple recommend polls and callings being polled.
One thing that I've noticed is that people have started to form much smaller, more intimate groups of maybe 20 people to discuss their own private pain or their own plans for their membership in the church. That's one thing I've seen.
Okay. I'm just going to make comments until I'm moderated. No, I'm joking.
Banhammer. You're done.
First, about 7 months ago, I was just getting sick of... I was on the Mormon Hub. I'm on the Mormon Hub again. But I was just kind of getting sick of with... how big the group is, how many comments were just more emotional, uninformed. But there's a lot of historians on the group, and I'm like, I really like the threads that people would put up and the questions that people would ask. So that got me to start my own group, Mormon Historians. And so, yeah. Check
love
it out.
Group.
But
we all
it's
love
a small
that group.
It's 800 people, and I haven't had to do that much moderating, thankfully. And comment, if I've kicked you out, you're not going to a lesser kingdom. So I think that's the biggest difference But my question is, how do you deal with things when things get bigger? Because that's what I've had, that's one of my conflicts talking to people, inbox messaging, is you might not want it to get too big because it gets harder to control. So I have that question, and then just to be funny, I want to know from Rock, is your book still $9.95?
No, for some reason,
price went back.
Yeah, it's listed at $15, and Amazon dropped it to $9.90, and they raised it to $13.50, and I don't have any control over that, so I'm sorry about that. And by the way, Josh gently nudged me off one time when I was off topic. It wasn't about history, it was about my promoting myself.
So, size. I mean, I know even in the hub sometimes we've had discussions about size, because there's the joke, like, size matters and do we want to be bigger? But it's, I mean, size is challenging when you're dealing with moderating.
I absolutely, oh, there's more than four.
There's 25 of like 25 moderators, I believe, except 21, for cutting.
20. We've been cutting, but we are over 20 as of right now. I will absolutely say that
the FMH group has over 40 moderators.
The size really does affect the tone and the environment. Because one thing that especially happens is, especially with a smaller group, you have an understanding of what you can. You might have an understanding of what the conversation should be. But as soon as you get more people, especially if there's an influx, like maybe the group was mentioned in another group or mentioned on a blog or something, you get an influx of people who have no awareness or no understanding of the history. And so you either continue to have meta conversations to try to get people up to speed, or you have to deal with people who don't have that shared context. So I will absolutely say, size is something that, yeah, we like more people, but chances are it's going to lead to slightly worse conversations.
And as you're a little bit smaller, you have a decent understanding of who other people are and what their voice is. Like, you kind of understand a little bit of what they talk like and what they sound like online, and some people are a little bit drier or a little bit snarkier or a little bit more informal. And so if they come off a little bit off, you understand that and you let them get away with it. But if some random person comes in and said something, you get offended and it's like, oh, no, that's just how, it's fine. They're just having an off day. And so personalities clash, something conflicts, somebody, there's suddenly a flame war and it was nothing.
As I see it, the blog activity, the blogger knackle, what you're doing fulfills a need. I think there are opportunities for people to express their opinions, and there are opportunities for people who are looking to formulate an opinion. I'd be very interested in your perspective on how well the blog environment is satisfying those needs, and where do you think we need to go to be able to provide that interaction that people apparently aren't getting anywhere else within the system, but really need. It's almost, what is the virtual environment that we need to get to be able to support and engage and embrace one another?
I could point you to a large body of literature.
Can I comment on that question?
Yeah, please.
So, I mean, for me, the answer is local groups, because our group in Phoenix serves that function for me and a lot of the people in the community.
There is a lot of research pointing to online virtual communities that augment and can support local in-person groups, though, that do some things that in-person local groups cannot do.
Right.
Thank you. My question is, first I have a criticism about moderation. I feel that a lot of times there are conversations that need to happen and they're shut down. And we see that a lot, as I say, when we have conversations about race or some topics that are a little more difficult for people. And when we have these conversations, I absolutely love the different views and the discussion that happen, because I think that's necessary not only for me to help shape my view and, okay, what am I doing here that is wrong? Someone is bringing a good point to help each other. I think that's necessary for a community to grow. Now, as you mentioned, FMH has over 40 moderators, and my point is, do you feel that conversations are being shut down when you personally think they should go on? How do you guys talk to each other as moderator about that issue when you have these agreements of, okay, this is a hard conversation that needs to happen because our community needs to grow through this kind of conversation, but it is shut down?
I think one of the most difficult things about moderating Mormons in a group like that is we've all been raised with the thought that contention is of the devil. and we conflate contention with disagreement. And so people start to get uncomfortable when there's just disagreement and ask for things to be shut down. And sometimes moderators have to go in and they don't have any context, and they're saying, okay, something's going wildly sideways here. I'm going to shut it down until I have time to see what's happening. And then we try to re-engage.
Go ahead. Another really difficult thing is when we're trying to moderate a conversation like that, you're dealing, especially in a large group, you're dealing with a lot of people who want to have these conversations and want to participate in these conversations, and maybe there's 40 or 50 people on that thread, and there could be 10 of them or 20 of them or 30 of them who don't have the tools they need to be able to participate in that conversation in a way that is not destructive or harmful or hurtful to other people. So 10 of them might be able to have that conversation in a productive way, but there might be even 5 of them or 10 of them who are trying to participate in that conversation, and they're doing it in really, really hurtful ways. They don't have the vocabulary, or they don't have the patience, or they don't have a way. They might be trolling, or they might just be doing it in really harmful, harmful, hurtful ways. And if you've got 1 or 2 or maybe 20 people who are jumping into that conversation, you can't moderate that conversation when 5 or 10 or half of the people are going to end up hurting everyone else in that conversation. And so sometimes, especially when it's virtual, you have to shut it down just because we have to look out for everyone else and make sure that harm isn't being done. And that's where we end up feeling really, really bad, because we have to make sure that we're looking out for everyone else. We can't, I would love to have that conversation and participate in that conversation with the 10 or 15 or 20 people who can do it, but I can't let it hurt 30 other people, which sucks.
And we definitely go...
No, I was just going to say, we're just going to take these last two comments and then we've got to shut it down, so.
Oh, of course. I do know that in FMH, we need to have more conversations about race, and we really need to work on our intersectionality there. That is a huge blind spot for us, and we recognize that. And
and several other touchy subjects.
Right. There's a lot. That's a big one for me personally. That's something that I am personally.
And in the hub too. We have so many conversations we need to have, but it's hard to figure out how to give the people in those communities the tools that they need to be able to have those conversations.
Yeah. Anyway. So I'm
worried about the wording on that, Nicole.
Anyway.
I need to figure out the wording on that better.
I want to have the hard conversations. The hard conversations maybe can't always happen in FMH because there's so many people who are coming into that space who have just recognized for themselves that there's gender inequality in the Mormon church. And they're so hyper-focused on that inequality that they're blind to other inequalities. And that's a really difficult that's a really difficult thing to moderate around. And I would love to have those harder conversations. That's all maybe we need to form a new group, you and I.
I guess my point is not just on the top of race. It's like any conversation that becomes hard, hard and uncomfortable, and you say sometimes people don't have the tools and people are suffering, but isn't that sometimes necessary so that everybody can try to understand the other side? I feel that sometimes pain is necessary knowledge, and then, as you say, the church has taught so much that disagreement is over the devil, and unfortunately, people, a lot of time when you're trying to disagree with them, they get into, oh, no, this is a discussion, we should not have this here, let's shut it down. And I feel that that way we're silencing too many interesting topics that could go so much further if we just could allow to happen and see where it goes a little more.
Right. I agree with that. I had a thought and it just left me. So I think you're absolutely right.
I wanted to speak to Tatiana's question just to raise up for everybody that at FMH, we have identified our two weaknesses are race and single women in the church. And so what we look at is we've got 40 people, but we skew heavily white and we skew heavily married. And so if our moderators don't reflect greater diversity, what we know to be true is that when those hard conversations come up, our personal filters are seeing it as just a straightforward moderation issue, like Nicole was saying. Like, is this a conversation that can happen or can't happen because it's getting, too out of control? Are the tools necessary to have this conversation extant? But if we had greater diversity in our moderation, I think that would read very differently to us. So both on the Hub and in FMH, we're saying one thing is our moderators need to be more reflective, and that keeps us from being knee-jerk and shutting down conversations that are really, they're hard conversations, but they're particularly hard because we haven't done the work. We haven't started grappling with it. We're not relational. So I think Tatiana just nominated herself to be a moderator in FMH, because that's the way it works. Can I have an applause for Tatiana? She's going to be great. We don't vote at FMH. We throw like dill pickles in a ring. And
jump you in.
Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to speak to Tatiana.
All right. So I was thinking about what you said earlier about, like the truth crusaders, right? Because that's a problem in every Mormon-related Facebook group, at least, that I've been in. And we in Phoenix came up with kind of a way to combat that I thought might be interesting for everybody that's here. And that's basically, we wrote in our commenting rules, in our posting rules, that you use I statements instead of making statements of fact. You have to say, I believe, or, this is how I feel. And people don't do it, but you can always use it as a moderation tool to say, if you would have framed this as an I statement, it wouldn't have been a problem. But because you didn't, it's a problem. And I don't know if you guys have any other sort of tricks of the trade, sort of like that help not let those people dominate the conversation. Because, evangelism has been a problem in our group, and that has sort of helped to combat it.
I don't think that we necessarily have anything that speaks directly to I statements, because someone could say, I believe that anyone who can actually believe any of this, blankety blankety blank, is a deluded fool. That's still, just because they put I believe in front of it doesn't mean that it changed it. But what we just put in, point blank, that evangelism, does not, we don't do it. So instead of saying, if you'd put it in an I believe statement, we try to talk with people, and this works to varying degrees, about whether they find that someone could believe in a different opinion reasonably and whether they are okay with other people believing different things. Because as soon as they say, I think that anyone who disagrees with me is stupid, blah, 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 then we know, okay, you can be let go. You can, here's the door. Please self-deport. If you don't, then we might have to take action. I guess that's kind of harsh. And these are not like hard and fast rules. These are just so that in case something gets over the line, we can use it if we need to. So I guess someone could say, well, you let this guy, do this and not this other person. But it's very difficult.
I'm a believer. I'm an active church-going Mormon. And my style is that I will make as much room for non-believers as I want there to be room for me to be a believer. And that's really important to me. So I respect people that don't believe. I respect people who leave the church. And I hope that I can get the same in return. And I hope that doesn't make me a truth crusader. But That's just where I come from. I like to skew on that end of the believery spectrum in our moderation. So, anyway.
Okay, well, that is all the time we have. So thank you so much for coming out. I just want to remind everyone, if you ordered a box lunch, that will be happening just right over here. So to pick those up, the cafeteria is closed today. And so you can go off campus if you don't have lunch arrangements and come back. And I'd also like to point you to some of the great sessions happening at 2 o'clock. We are having something new at Sunstone. We're trying sort of TED-style talks. It's an experiment, so be patient with us. But I would encourage you to go to that. And also to join the Mormon Hub. Do so at your own risk. But also we would really appreciate people contributing to the conversation, because really the contributors are us. They're you. So if you want to see conversations happening that you're not seeing, then create a conversation. So anyway, thank you so much for joining the panel. Will you give our panel another round of applause, please?